Hey, this is Kay. Welcome to another podcast. This is Well Connect, Holism in Politics. Here for another episode following our part one is our part two. So if you haven't gone over to check out and listen to that episode, I suggest you do that first before listening to this, because again, this is part two. Part two of what, my darlings? Part two of global health. Global health initiatives here, global health. The role of nurses and the impact we have on global health. I'm going to set the tone. I'm actually sitting out here in my courtyard. It's a beautiful, beautiful night. The sky is dark and the moon is shining bright. I can't see from where I am, but I decided to sit out in the courtyard to get some absorb some of that moon energy. Felt it was a good way to start off my August. And of course, sitting here recording with you, which you lovelies, I think just sets off the mood for me to step on my soapbox. So before we step on my soapbox, okay, because if you don't know who I am, I'm Kaywana Williams, registered nurse, clinical research nurse as well, community-based. Woo woo! Shout out to all the community health nurses out there. And my goal. You know, I guess they say my superpower can be dismantling disparities. But that is the goal. And right now we're going to set the tone with part two, role of nurses and sustainable development goals surrounding global health. Let's make that impact. So welcome again. This is part two, role of nurses in sustainable global sustainable development goals, SDGs. And if you're wondering, just to recap what part one was about, basically I was ranting. No, we were discussing basically in today's pace with the fast healthcare settings, nursing leadership at all stages is being challenged to think outside of the box. So that was the gist of it. That was our conclusion. Every day, nurses are confronted with new and more difficult difficulties trying to imagine a safe, smart, economically and sustainable development strategy and place those into goals. So smart managers who are preparing to take on progressively complicated and challenging issues are required. Smart managers. Nurses are natural born leaders. That's what they say, all nurses. All nurses are leaders. All nurses are leaders. So what does that mean? That means whether you're at the bedside or you are CEO of Fortune 500 billion dollar companies out here, health systems, or your chief medical officer, or your a director or DON, director of nursing, or you're an NP in a small primary care in a rural area, or you're a bedside nurse in MedSurg, I see you. Pick one, anyone. Choose one. You're a leader. You're a leader. You're a leader because you went to nursing school and acquired knowledge to practice safely, and you have to be able to discern and make these decisions sometimes in a whippersnapper of a moment, and you have to stick to the standards to make safe decisions. I mean, some standards may not apply to all patients, which is, you don't want to get me on that soapbox. And understanding that individualizing care is the future of medicine. And so we have some smart managers. There's a call for action. Call for action. Nurses must be willing to set realistic goals, set an example, and hold others accountable. Ooh. Let me tell you this one. This has been one heck of a journey. In leadership, I've been a nurse for 7 years, and although I say things like all nurses are leaders, some of us lead in capacities of formal training. Some of us have gained our leadership through just the natural way of nursing and career development, and some of us are just natural born leaders, and we have to really understand, you know, where our skills and leadership stands and how much we need to improve may probably be limited. So your choices, your opportunity to gain more leadership skills may be hindered by there are different reasons. But keeping yourself accountable for gaining that leadership skills is your responsibility and no one else's. And particularly nurses of color, I really want you to stress, I want to stress that to you, that if you feel like you could be doing something better, you know, if you can improve in your nursing practice in any way, whether that's reading articles, taking webinars. A lot of our facilities give these opportunities to visit, to have workshops, to join committees. Joining committees in your organization is huge, especially for shared governance. If you want to practice at the top of your game, if you really want to really practice nursing to the extent of your scope, get involved. You got to get involved. Because once you can hold yourself accountable for your practice, and keeping your practice close to standards, because that's what you're constantly achieving every time you've taken a webinar, you've read an article, you've read a journal, you've joined a committee, you started a committee, you've had one-on-one advice with your peers and your mentors, or seeking a mentor. Oh, do not get me started on the fact that nurses really do not take advantage of seeking out mentors. Not all nurses do. And I think no matter where you are, I think people assume that you should have a mentor for where you're going or where you're looking to rise, right? Because everyone thinks you're climbing the ladder. But this is normal. I mean, to me, nursing I don't want to say spectrum. When you say spectrum, it really sets that, it really solidifies what the medical population, medical was, you know, doctors, they used to say things like, nursing didn't have a uniformity to their education pathways. We got the mill farms and all these disrespectful things, and it's totally, totally fucking disrespectful. I don't care, I cuss. But to really set that mentorship within the seeking of creating smarter managers, smarter leaders, nursing leaders, is all about seeing nursing not as a spectrum, okay, but as a cycle. should be a cycle. So you have your novice nurse, which is all that this is written, right? Where we hide behind textbooks. All of this is written already, right? So imagine if we actually did what we said. Cunning. So imagine if we actually did what we said we would do. Create our novice nurse, turn her into and from a novice, you know, from a beginner to a novice, and a novice to an expert, and then you're advanced. Imagine that was the set standard in every single, like, so there's two pathways for, let's say, just pretend, there's two pathways. There's the nurse who says, hey, I want to deliver direct patient care. That's what I'm interested in. Allow them to go down that path. And then in the same path, we're all starting from the same fundamental ground, say, hey, well, my path is going to be doctorate, you know, because if you're going to go that way, that would be the set standard. And if you're going to go at the bedside, you must have a BSN, because that's already been one of the things that we've been pushing for, right? BSN 2020, how did that go? We are creating smarter leaders, right? Nurse leader position is critical, they said, the nurse leader's position. So you don't have to, what I have seen others portray or project is, well, you don't have to have the title to do the job. I mean, yeah, you don't have to have the title to do the job, but does your culture really call for that? You know, are you creating a culture where all nurses feel like they can speak up without retaliation? Are you really supporting nurses, voices, within your community, within your hospital units, within your governmental institutions, within your private institutions? Are you guys really fostering these cultures? So, you know, this is everyone, this is health systems in general. So if you are not, I suggest that everyone takes a pause. Take a pause. You know, in nursing and surgical world, we call it timeout. We time out, you know, you take a time out before you do something very critical, like go into someone's body with a whole bunch of sharp instruments. Hey, pause. We are about to enter this patient's body with a sharp knife. We should wait and make sure it's the right patient, the right place, the right procedure, yes, and the right limb. Guess what? Yes, please do. Please take some time out. Please take some time out to ensure that is the right patient, the right procedure, and the right instruments. Let's do the bare minimum. So let's say we take a time out and we say, hey, does our culture really foster the ability for nurses to speak up and ensure that their voices are heard, exercising their rights as nurse leaders and patient care advocates? Okay, so any good transforming, you know, transformational leader will tell you, you know, to really take a minute to observe your environment. You know, observation is key. Then, do you have the self-discipline? Do you think logically and with an objective mind? And as well, are you well informed by data? This goes back to the statement I made earlier about, hey, pick up a journal, pick up an article, read, go to seminars, go to conferences, get peer mentors. Nursing is a cycle, not a spectrum. You don't have a really, really good nurse, really, really bad nurse. You have lack of continuity in the professional areas, professional developed areas. So, are you well informed by data? Is you are accountable? I said that earlier. You are accountable, right? As a nurse, you are accountable. That is your license. That is your license. You are accountable. If you do not protect your license by informing yourself with the latest, newest procedures, guidelines, you're doing yourself a disservice, but ultimately what you're doing is it's trickling down in the quality of care. So you're practicing outdated measures, God forbid, based on what you think you know has changed, your charts are pulled, and then you know we're just not going to go down that slippery slope. And what I feel has been missing, and I just had a conversation with some of my peer RNs who've actually been practicing nursing longer than I have. And I would say I was raised by old school nurses. And old school nurses, if you know what that is, those are the nurses that still knew how to put the two corners, the 4-point corner tight on the patient bed, where you can bounce a quarter off of it. I was raised by those nurses. So I practice very strictly because of my training, my formal training. So being raised by nurses that are very, very strict on the patient care that they deliver actually ended up making me a better nurse. It actually evolved my critical thinking, because once I knew for sure my content, I learned deviations. So when you becoming a good leader takes self-discipline and ensuring that you have a logical mind. And logic comes through observation. And when you observe your patients and you see that you're not separate, you're not the objector is not separate from the objective, so from the object. So the person is not separate from the object. And if you're caring for patients and you're delivering bad care, poor care to your patients, what you do directly influences that care, because you're not separate from that, because those decisions that you're making, and to incorporate the patient decision, and then you come to a consensus, a concise decision, then you're still allowing a outcome to happen, but it's the outcomes, the decisions you're making are increasingly less harmful. Let me say that again. When you make less harmful decisions in your patient care, it increases the quality of care, which the patients actually get better sooner, and you have less casualties, sentinel events, and med errors. It's actually starting with a decision, but then let's play devil advocate. And it's true, there are factors that go into how well a nurse can deliver her care. And that is, you know, factors such as time constraints. I'm like beating a dead horse here. Staffing shortage. Yes, we all know. Resources, finances, et cetera, et cetera. Time, people, and resources. So you have time, people, and money. We won't say resources is money. So financial, time, people, and money. Time, people, and money. So when you have those three big factors, and it's all about finding a new way to think of nursing outside of the box. Global health challenges do not occur in a box. Global health challenges do not occur in a box. You have to bring some out-of-the-box thinkers. You have to bring people who can take complicated issues that must be addressed and thoroughly and extensively, yay, we said it, comb through the data, comb through, you know, the data, and really get past what we all have been doing for the last 60 years or so. Professional nurses can play a role as worldwide change by being involved in their areas. You know, professional nursing organizations, strategy and legislation groups, and your workplace, like I mentioned before. You don't have to be, you know, superhero K. You don't have to be that. You don't need to be. If you're working with a very thorough nurse, that's her style of nursing. That's the way she practiced. You practice one way, I practice another. The difference between doctors and nurses is the doctors aren't hanging out with each other between each patient. So like you have a unit and you have 34 patients and you say you have 7 nurses, you have about 5 nurses, including the charge nurse, hopefully on a good day. And then what happens is women are nurses, and we know we gather and we come together and do talking, and you have nurses who are men too. They come and they talk and we socialize. Not saying all nurses just socialize on their time, but you see it a lot. But what happens is that, you know, doctors are like moving, they're doing a lot. They're teaching, they're documenting. And, you know, nurses, we have a lot to do in the workplace. So joining your committees is priority. Join your committees. The role of a nurse in Sustainable Development Goals, SDGs, so global health. My proposal, the Sustainable Development Goals, they are designed for a healthier and more efficient future for everyone. Yep, and I said everyone. All of us. Unemployment, injustice, poverty, climate change. Hey, Senate just passed a bill today. Climate change and healthcare bill was passed. Yay! We're going to put some, drop some claps in the middle of this, hopefully. And that was monumental. That's monumental, especially for our current administration. That's really a great feat in itself. And so we are looking at Sustainable Development Goals. Unemployment, injustice, poverty, climate change, ecological pollution, stability, and equality are among the worldwide concerns they confront. The Sustainable Development Goals. This is not rocket science, and implementation is going to be a big part of this, right? So that's what I say it's not rocket science, but implementation is going to have to really, really be a big part of it. And when you go into these certain spaces who may need these programs implemented state to state, I hope one day, God willing, it will happen. And then you meet the resistance. Behavioral change. Sustainable Development Goals and healthcare are the same. Like, make a firm commitment to ending AIDS. You see how easy that is? Just make a very firm commitment and say, we are putting our feet down on HIV and AIDS. Okay? If you really, really think it was hard, I told you it wasn't rocket science, we can say the whole point of these SDGs is to just literally say, write it in policy that we are taking a firm commitment to ending this shit. Okay? TB, malaria, and other contagious disease pandemic by 2030. Y'all don't realize what's going on around y'all health-wise. People just assume health is me going to the doctors. Yes, that is a step, but first we got to get your coverage. And then once you get coverage, you got to get you access. Where you going to go? On a low-income Medicaid or Medicare? How you going to get there? Who's coming to check on you during the day? Have you eaten? Can you afford to eat? Are you not choosing buying groceries to buy your medications? When's the last time you took a bath? Do you need help toileting? Do you need help to the bathroom? Is it hard? Is it getting harder to walk? Your kids have moved across each edge of the world, one in the Southern Hemisphere, one in the Western Hemisphere, one on the East Coast, one on the West Coast, and you live alone. It would take a while to even get them there if they had to in an emergency. And in case of emergency, who do we call? Where is the directive? What is the directive? Can I say on a piece of paper who I would like to make decisions for me on behalf of why and how often I need you to try to save my life? Write it, date it, sign it. Doesn't even need to be notarized. Put your name on it, social security numbers, and sign on a piece of paper from the printer. It's that easy. It's not rocket science. Can we confront these issues? Can we help everyday Americans survive healthier? Are these decisions non-critical? Because they seem pretty crucial to sustain the lives of our citizens, our American citizens of all shapes, colors, ethnicity, background. Coverage. You talking about coverage? Coverage? I thought you was talking about, like, you know, the real thing, like, you know, insurance. You talking about coverage? Listen, health coverage, ensuring that everyone has access to safe and cheap medications and vaccines in a first world country is a no-brainer. Guys, welcome to the episode. So this segment, we're going to discuss social determinants. Social determinants. My favorite subject, STH. This is Well Connect, Holism in Politics. If you don't know me, if you're new to our community, and you don't know who I am, I'm Nurse K, aka Kwana William, registered nurse extraordinaire. Says me. And I've been a nurse for 7 years. I worked in several different areas of nursing. I'm currently clinical research nurse in the community. Ooh, ooh, shout out to all the community health nurses out there. And I am enjoying life. This is our podcast, Holism in Politics. Welcome to the Well Connects family. Stay well. All right, we're going to discuss the social determinants of health, also known as SHD, SDH. Oh, we just got started. Hold up on the line. SDH are a group of factors that influence people's health. So social determinants are a group of factors that influence people's health and usually are circumstantial, in which people are born, developed, earned, and survive, you know, the ability to. So the circumstances between the circumstances people are in when they're born. As well as how these circumstances affect their health. How does being born in the inner city versus the suburbs affect your health? How does your development, how is your development hindered or supported? Where do you earn? How does income, how does the ability to work or have a job or have access to income affect your health? What is your model of survival? What is your framework? How do you survive in the environment that you're in? And how does that survival model, thought process, mindset, beliefs, cultural, ethnic background affect how healthy you are in all its extents of the word, meaning it's not just genetic, it could be environmental, it could be where you're born that affects you, your health negatively. While as in as I strive to assist patients attain their best health, we routinely address social determinants of health, nurses, we do, in our practice every day. Social determinants of health. This is something that needs to be, it's right now, I feel like social determinants of health is isolated just to research. I don't really feel like social determinants of health is being addressed at the bedside. I know we have interdisciplinary rounds. We have social workers, some of us, some health systems, which, you know, legislation and laws, the ACA already done told y'all what y'all needed to do with this care coordination. So, you know, they have social workers, PTOT, doctors, nurses, patient representative, Our baby boomers are coming. This is going to be a massive influx for a greater need of elderly care, geriatrics, gerontology, is a needed skill set. And I think a lot of times what new nurses are doing is we need to reorient nursing to our student nurses. We need to orient them to nursing, not how to be a nursing student, but we need to orient our nurses to nursing. Hey, new nurse. Hey, how long have you been a nurse? I've been a nurse less than 3 years, so that makes me a new grad. Hi, new grad. I'm Kay. I've been a nurse for 7 years. It sucks, but I can get you through it. She says, okay, great, no problem. So what's the first step? First step is know your policies and procedures. Know your policies and procedures. Know why you're doing what you're being told to do and why it's important. Because these regulations, these laws, these policies, these procedures don't just come out of thin air like, hey, this is, oh, creepy guy in the corner just writing policies just because he doesn't like us. No. No, bad nurse. That's not how it goes. What it goes is, hey, this is how we get the fuck paid. This is how we care for our patients safely so we don't get the fuck in trouble, simply put. And so when you have that personality and being a strict nurse, Lord Jesus, watch out. So here's what we've come up with. New nurses, new grads, know what the hell you're doing and why the hell you're doing it. Is it the right thing to do? Is it the right thing to do for this patient with this clinical pathway? Is this something that I can do as a nurse? Can I do this? Step three, policy procedures is one step because literally they go hand in hand. Step two, know your scope of practice. Do not tell me you can't do assessments and you're a nurse. Do not write off on things that has no business with you. If it has to do with billing, that's not where you should be putting your signature, unless you work for that department and they've trained you in some type of capacity. Know your rights, not only your rights, but your patient's rights. Step four, speak up by advocating for your patients, ensuring that the policies and procedures that you know that are in place either protects you or your patient and the doctor from losing their freaking license. Step five, be compassionate and considerate to your colleagues. These all affect the way we care for our patients, which either can hinder and make situations of social determinants worse, like poor care, infection rates, pressure ulcers. You're caring for a patient with a higher risk of pressure ulcers who doesn't have anyone to take care of them at home when discharged from the hospital. Where do you think that patient's going to come right back to after developing that ulcer under your care or the lack of? Nurses need to be aware of their connection, meaning the connection of their knowledge to their practice, the care of standards that you provide can cause problems or create and improve, decreasing the effects of readmission already due to the patient having to be admitted with no care from no one. Do most of the times the nurses in the hospital were taken back by the patient coming in from home in that kind of condition. That's acceptable the first time, but you know, because they didn't have anyone. But you know, it's not acceptable anytime, but the fact that they didn't have anyone, then we finally found them, they came to the hospital. That's a high level quality care to get the patient back to baseline to be discharged home. He's being discharged home with care, with home care. and yet he's coming in and out of my hospital. Why? He's coming in and out of my ER. For what? He has a nurse coming to his home. We have to take some kind of accountability for ourselves in the way we practice nursing. We have to have some compassion for our patients, especially those who are experiencing SDH, social determinants of health. The more vulnerable populations are older, our children, even those who are in between. Behavioral health is a big thing. Access to care affects behavioral health. The ability for these people to care for them in a holistic way requires us to be holistic thinkers and carers. And it means holistically. What I do affects my patients. This is a continuum. This is a cycle. We stay connected, and your connection between how well you perform your care and the availability of that care increases patient outcomes. Decreases the ability for our patients to be able to be in and out of our ERs, readmission rates. The insurers, the biggest insurers of all of this is CMS. It's a cycle, it's like a domino effect. So, you know, I heighten some issues of healthcare, and, you know, you have inequalities, you have equity in healthcare, then you have inequality and socioeconomic status, right? Yeah, you have all those. The Millennial Development Goals contribute significantly to the improvement of billions of people's individuals around the globe, simply addressing these issues in a more systematic way, being accountable for our practice, teaching our younger nurses. I think I've said this in part in Global Health Part 1. Teaching us our younger nurses is our, we're obligated. You don't see doctors going around doing that nonsense. We are not, they don't deny training each other. It is part of their culture. Things are rough, and I'm not asking you to break your backs of, you know, and things are rough. Things were rough. Things have been rough. Things were rough before the pandemic, and the pandemic just happened to show everybody their stank-ass ways. But that's just my personal opinion. And so I just want to stick back to these Millennium Development Goals. And so with the Millennium Development Goals, you know, just implementing these can improve billions of people's lives, okay? That's another, like, I just wanted you guys to really put that on your plate, on your template. If we address, if we use the Millennial Development Goals, that may be a great contributor to significantly improving healthcare out there. Okay, but every time the differences between rich and poor, educated, uneducated, healthy, the healthy increase, the unhealthy increases every day. The unhealthy increases every day. Okay, the Millennium Development Goals contribute significantly to the improvement of billions of people, individuals around the globe. But every time the difference between poor, rich, educated, uneducated, healthy, unhealthy increases every day, the social determinant goals are to move all such inequalities around the globe. We can use this to remove all inequalities. All of this, the rich, poor, the educated, uneducated, the healthy, unhealthy. Ooh, y'all don't want to have that conversation. Y'all not ready. Y'all want to have that conversation. Y'all don't want to have that conversation. Y'all don't. Y'all don't want to have the conversation between getting rid of that, right? The differences between rich and poor, the differences between educated and uneducated. Let me tell y'all something. Education, I think, is the most valuable tool. Knowledge, seeking knowledge is the most valuable, is one of the most valuable tools. The more we educate our generations to come, nurses, if you want a reliable counterpart, team player, team worker in your team, first you have to, you need to inhibit those skills and qualities yourself. And then once you take that accountability, then your coworkers should also take that accountability, right? So once you have agreed to work at standards, then that standard includes educating the younger nurses. I am so sick of hearing these stories and people blaming it on the pandemic. We have to educate our younger nurses. It is going to be beyond crisis mode if we do not. And we all know that it's coming and we see it. And there is a shortage of nurses, always have, but even more so now. And I am begging, I am pleading to my nurses' counterparts to really understand that the way we treat each other sucks like hell, and we need to stop that bullshit. Then we need to educate our younger nurses. Why? We have to share the knowledge that we know. The pandemic sucked. Yes, it did. But it is our obligation to train and teach our young nurses the standards of nursing care, and so they can perform their job in the most effective and safe manner. There's a lot going on. There's always a lot going on. There's never been a dull moment. There isn't a dull moment. We're just all sensitive to it now, because the pandemic allowed us to pause the timeout before the surgery with the sharp with the sharp pointy tools. It allowed us to take a timeout, reset. So when we got reintroduced, we all saw exactly what it was truly made of. Hey, what's that song? Okay. Anyway, it's one of those things. Now we have to ensure that we close the gap in education for our new grads. We need to teach them. We need to know they know what they know to do. They know what to do. They know what not to do, and they know when to come and seek for help and feel comfortable in doing so and not chastised for doing so. We should not be degrading, yelling at our new grads. Okay? That is not what we do. We do not eat our young. I need you to say it with me now. I say, state your name. I'm a registered nurse or a nurse in training, and I will no longer disrespect, belittle, chastise, slander, gossip about my fellow nursing co-workers, and I will contribute to the education of my new grads because it is my sole obligation as a registered nurse. Thank you. Just say that. That would be perfect. Put down your hands now. Just really sticking to contributing in the most positive and productive way. So improving our working environments, improving our health, improving individuals' community, that's what we do. This is the heart of all nursing. This is the heart of all nursing. This is the heart of nursing is what it's all about. That's what it's all about. That's what it's all about. I'm Nurse K, and I don't play. Hip hop, hooray. Don't go away. Stay tuned for the next section of the podcast. I love you.